The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Oh, happy Friday, everyone. Look, what a big day we've got for you. There's so much going on, including, of course, the payroll. And that is why we are live in London and live in Paris. Oh, hang on. No, that's not Paris. It's Blackpool. Yes, we are live in London and Blackpool. And these are your headlines. Apple announces the largest buyback in US history as quarterly earnings top expectations. Now, that's despite a 10% fall in iPhone sales, the latter being better than expected. Well, US equities rallied hard ahead of today's key jobs report. Investors looking for clues on the Fed's next policy move.
Labour takes Blackpool South in regaining the Red Wall seat in what is a significant defeat then in the by-elections for UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's Conservative Party.
And mining giant Glencore reportedly eyes its own bid for Anglo American, potentially sparking a bidding war with rival BHP.
Well, what a morning we've got. And as I say, sending poor Arabina up to Blackpool of all places. Now, look, there's a lot going on and we are going to cover everything, I promise you, over the next 3 hours as well. But Karen Cho, you've moved to the wall because we are going to do an Apple extravaganza. And I know that we care about software services. I know we care about iPhones. We care about China. You care immensely about what the AI is going to look like going forward. But I've got to be honest, they had me at 110. 110. Think about that, viewers. One company, one announcement, $110 billion of buybacks. Wow, Karen.
Magnificent Seven. Does it deserve to be in the Magnificent Seven because of the buybacks, because of the dividends, or because of the AI strategy? Big question. We're going to be debating it. Now, shares in Apple are extended trade are higher. This after the tech giant posted a beat on second quarter earnings and announced the largest buyback in U.S. history. Apple reported total net income of $23.6 billion, or $1.53 per share. That was higher than estimates, but still 2% down on the year. Total revenue came in at just under $91 billion. That was more than 4% lower compared to the year prior, and marked the fifth decline in the past six quarters. Now, despite the dip in earnings, Apple still authorized a $110 billion share buyback, the largest ever in US history. The firm also raised its dividend payout by 1 cent to 25 cents per share. Now, breaking down by segment, overall iPhone sales, Apple's most important unit, fell more than 10%. However, CEO Tim Cook attributed the decline to tough comparisons from the previous period. iPad and wearables were also down, but services revenue remained the bright spot, climbing more than 14%. Elsewhere, investor attention was focused on how Apple is faring in China, where local rivals have been rapidly gaining market share. Revenue in the region declined 8%, although that was far better than expected. Cook said he remains optimistic on China and that iPhone sales in the country actually increased. Let's get to Manfred Abraham, who is the CEO of Yonder Consulting. Thank you very much for joining us, Manfred. I just want to pick up on the buyback side, because we've seen a lot of sizzle over the course of the earnings season, but a lot of that has been around AI, with the big tech giants promising more on that front. When it came to Apple, still relying on this metric around buybacks and dividends, a little bit of the old when it comes to what we've seen from Apple. Is that enough for it to be considered a Magnificent Seven stock in this day and age?
Well, I would say Apple is definitely a Magnificent Seven stock. It's a slightly unusual player because it doesn't fit in the tech world in the same way as the others. If you look at profitability of Apple, it's much higher than its competition. It's also a mixture between a luxury or a premium player and a tech player. And a bit difficult for investors to sometimes wrap their head around that.
I want to ask you more about the AI, because this strategy here has been very central to enormous valuations that's been attached to a lot of companies, and in particular around the Magnificent Seven. What we now know is that there's a developer conference coming up, and that's in June. Is it just a matter of timing here that we're waiting it out for more news flow, that Apple will produce something and we may get a reaction when that AI news strategy hits? Or is this just a selling opportunity that there's a little bit of appetite thanks to the share buybacks and dividends? And if you're a betting person at this stage, you take some bets off the table.
Apple is certainly a bit slower in the AI play than the rest of the seven. But Apple has always been a bit late to the game with a lot of developments. But it's always then come out with something that might be a bit more groundbreaking than the rest of the industry. And I don't think you'll hear much about it until later in the year. I think Apple's been very clear that it's still working on things, and we're not going to hear anything in the next few weeks. I think on the developer conference, you'll probably hear more about a new iPad, which we haven't had any developments here, I think, since 2022. And sales have dropped quite a bit on that particular device. Now, AI, I wouldn't hold my breath for that in the short term, but probably something at the end of the year, and maybe something really interesting, probably in a collaboration with others.
Manfred, fascinating conversation you've already had. You've raised some very interesting points about why it is very different. You know, it's a luxury player, but also compared with many tech companies, the amount of buyback is quite staggering. And I'll almost take the opposite side of my wonderful colleague here. How on earth can anyone sell a stock when you've got a buyer in town picking up $110 billion of it as well? It's difficult to be a seller with that kind of force against them, isn't it?
It's a very interesting question. But I think, yes, you're right on that front. I do hear your argument. I would look much more about how Apple has built this kind of power wall and the ecosystem it has created. And we haven't talked about the services business at all, but the strong growth in the services business, this unique view of Apple of how it places itself in their customers' lives on a much bigger basis, which is a long-term game. Once Apple has managed to make a place in your life, it's very difficult to remove Apple from your life. And I think if you're an investor on a long-term scale, it's definitely a great stock to buy into.
Yeah, and I think that's very interesting. This is a company that believes it's around for the long term. They all do, but some of them aren't going to make it. And with that in mind, Vision Pro is a great case in point. I had a guest yesterday who said it almost doesn't matter how many Vision Pros they sell now. The learning process for Apple is going to be quite extraordinary for better and more widespread products to come later. Do you agree with that or do you disagree, sir?
It's interesting how little Tim Cook said about Apple Vision Pro. And generally, if it had sold more than they expected, you would have probably heard about it. So I'm assuming sales are a bit slower, and I think we've got seen signs in different places that might be the case. It is, of course, a very unusual product with a very high price tag. And as you said, I think Apple is trying a new world here, and it might not have found the audience for that yet, but Apple has in the past created these worlds. Think back of an iPod and the first iPhone when it came out. But it remains to be seen how ready the world is for this new world that Apple is creating. But let's see. We'll see over the like 6 months to a year.
Manfred, I've got to say, I don't know what to think about China after the mixed comments overnight. Tim Cook saying that growth in some markets was happening, including in China. But if we look at the greater China numbers, which, of course, has other parts of the region packed into the numbers, we saw that down 8.1% on China's sales. Are you worried about the narrative out of China when we know that competition from the likes of Huawei and others is stepping up at this point?
I got to admit, I'm a little bit confused about the way Tim Cook has presented this. And also read that the market share has gone up. Don't know how that happened exactly, but I'd say we have seen in China a turn to consumers feeling more pride in local brands and being happy to buy into them, and that will be a challenge for all global players and how they fare in the market. Apple has done better than expected. And it is, of course, still its second biggest market. We'll see, again, how this develops further. It's obviously the economy in China is not as strong as it was. And Apple does need a bit of strength in the economy to thrive.
Manfred, I want to ask you about the hardware. It does feel as though we need a hardware refresh from Apple. And you mentioned the iPads being updated. We saw in the numbers that there was a bit of appetite for the Macs as well, thanks to an upgrade. But what comes next? Because in tech universe, we're talking about on-device AI, and it's not going to take long before the wider mass market consumer realizes that there's something else coming to hardware that's going to have a fairly monumental impact. Is it going to be a bridge where consumers wait to cross it when they see that AI on device, no matter what device it is? Or do you think the consumer is ready for an upgrade no matter what at this stage? And you're going to see even a band-aid approach work for Apple if it upgrades the devices from here?
What surprised me is that Apple's a little bit slow on the generative AI part, which you'd expect from the positioning of Apple around the creativity aspect and, you know, bringing out this kind of getting you to find your own creative spirit to a certain extent. Generative AI is a great jumping off platform. If I look to our creatives, they are already using this extensively to generate ideas. And you would think Apple would be playing in this space. So I'd assume we will see some of those features soon on all its products.
All right, Manfred, superb. Thank you very much indeed for joining us nice and early. But very interesting stock and interesting comments from you as well. Manfred Abraham, CEO of Yonder Consulting. Berkshire Hathaway director Ronald Olson says the board will likely not grant Warren Buffett's expected successor, Greg Abel, the same freedoms. Now, Mr. Olson was speaking to shareholders in the lead up to Saturday's annual meeting in Omaha, Nebraska. He said there will be changes in the confidence level the board has enjoyed with Mr. Buffett, but that he has full confidence in Abel's leadership. Buffett's succession is expected to be a key theme at this year's meeting following the passing of Vice Chairman Charlie Munger last year at the age of 99. On a special programming note, tune in this Saturday for the Berkshire Hathaway annual shareholder meeting that is live on CNBC and streaming on CNBC.com. Becky Quick, of course, and Mike Santoli will be live from Omaha. Coverage starts at 15:30 Central European time.
To your point about whether you lean against the buyback and to my point as to whether this is somewhat of a trap for you now if there's no AI strategy around Apple, Berkshire Hathaway.
But you've just gone all binary on us straight away.
Well, I mean,
there is an AI strategy.
Well, we don't know what it is yet. And that's a lot of faith you place in a company that has performed in the past. We've seen disruption for a lot of companies that have been number one in their category. I mean, the Nokia effect, well cited across the industry.
Yeah.
That phone device,
we talked about that yesterday,
obviously,
enough,
is not something today. Berkshire, this is where I wanted to get to. I mean, Berkshire's got huge holding in Apple.
They have.
And they've made a huge amount on Apple. So do you take some of those bets off the table? Do you cash in on a paper profit and do you deliver that to shareholders? Or do you stay invested because Apple has been such a bankable horse in the race and you think in future there's even more returns thanks to this AI refresh that's coming to the industry?
Look, they had some terrific wins, like services, again, doing really well. Services as a software as a service.
Double digit. But we're seeing double digit gains elsewhere across the industry too.
Yeah, but double digit still means growing revenues. And net, this is a company. What was the figure? 90 billion? So if they're throwing off $90 billion a quarter, that is, off the top of my head, $360 billion. Even at flat revenue, that's $360 billion. No one's talking about long-term revenue declines. I think they're talking about special factors in China with the Huawei new release and what have you. We're talking about $360 billion of revenue, of which a large amount is going to go into CapEx, but a large amount clearly is going to go into continued share buybacks. We've just had the largest corporate buyback in history. Even if you think the company is going to go through a flattish stage, and I don't think you're talking about a decline, flat or growth could still equal enormous buybacks.
But is there a better bet elsewhere? And you think about some of the sizable percentage swings you've seen in other stocks.
Sure,
Nvidia, a great example of that. Could you actually see more returns from another quarter?
But they will come with more volatility, won't they? You say past performance, and you're absolutely right. It's one of the mantras that all our guests should say when they come on. Past performance is not a guide to future generated wealth or what have you, or future performance. But the fact of the matter is, betting against a company that has continually reinvented itself over, you know, 40, 50 year or 40 odd years, whatever, it's hard to say to not give them that, A, that they are going to come up with innovation, and B, that the buybacks aren't going to continue.
So
I'm not saying buy Apple, by the way. I don't own Apple. I don't have a view.
It's hard
to bet against it.
But the debate is more, what should it constitute in your portfolio? And if you look at Berkshire Hathaway, it represented nearly 50% of Berkshire's stock portfolio at year end. The 0.5% share, is it worth representing half of your portfolio? I mean, is that the number these days? I think in the past, if we thought about Apple, we had it as a growth stock, had it as a big payout, dividend payout as well. So is it that same stock for the future is the question mark.
It's about the valuation. I know we've got to move on, Adam. Sorry, hang on. I'm just going to get you the latest. Here we go. Right, the forward PE on the S&P 500. I know you can muck around with these figures. It's 20 times forward, yeah? Now,
I thought it was higher than that. I thought it was like 24.
No, the forward PE on the S&P 500 is 20 times forward. The forward PE on Apple is 24 times. It does not sound to... Again, I'm not telling people to buy Apple. Far from it. I'm giving you ideas. I'm just chucking stuff out there. 24 times forward for Apple against an S&P that trades at 20 times doesn't sound like a massive premium to me.
Right. Sorry, we've got to go.
All right. Coming up on the show, counting continues across the UK after local elections, which is exactly why we've sent Arabile to Paris.
Well, certainly not Paris, but one thing is for sure, the wheels of change are turning. Blackpool now certainly a Labour Party constituency then, with the minister here then obviously headed off to Westminster, in fact. And we'll unpack all the political details next.
Listen to CNBC's Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the biggest tech news from across the globe. Join me, Arjun Karpal.
And me, Tom Chitty, every week as we bring you insights into the top stories, unpack the latest trends, and find out where the industry is headed.
Now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
Welcome back. Local election results have so far delivered several blows to UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. The opposition Labour Party has flipped several seats, including, now there's a difference between the local elections, which is for local councils, I should explain to our international viewers, and MPs' seats, parliamentary seats, where there was a by-election because the Tory, the incumbent, has resigned, basically. So the Blackpool South by-election was for sending MPs to Parliament rather than the local elections. I should make that point. It was seen as a key battleground between the two leading parties. Now, voting is widely seen as a measure of the wider public sentiment ahead of the general election, which pretty much has to be. I mean, technically, you could do it in early 2025, but pretty much you've got to do it this year as well. Arabile, I've been joking all morning, but apparently the Blackpool Tower was modelled on the Eiffel Tower, and it's about half the height, Arabile, and it stands over your left shoulder. But what I think was very interesting in this is actually the voter apathy. Yes, there was a big swing to Labour. No doubt about it. Big success for Sir Keir Starmer. But the voter apathy saw, and I think I saw the turnout, was a three handle, somewhere in the region of 30-odd%, which just shows how voters are just sick of politics more generally.
That's certainly the case, actually, Stephen. Having spoken to somebody as well yesterday who doesn't necessarily always live here, but it was born necessarily in Blackpool, comes here very often along the promenade here as well, was just speaking about how even back in the day, you knew what you had to vote for and you knew what it was that was really significant and important because things would change. Now, ultimately, feels that it doesn't matter who you put in power. There is no change. And it's that voter apathy that you speak of, again, that just comes into play quite significantly, right? And somebody else that we've spoken to also then saying that one thing is for sure, that even if you change parties and put them in place, the changes we want don't happen quick enough either. So they're just worried about whether it makes any sense, really, to head to the polls. But nonetheless, as you made note of, a significant swing then, particularly in this election here, in this by-election, should I say, as well, here in Blackpool South, because, of course, the winner, Chris Webb, the new MP then, will be headed off to Westminster. Now, his plea, and he's significantly noted then as well, how we've clearly seen this change happen here in Blackpool, and it's the kind of change he anticipates to see for the rest of the country as well, of course, out of England and Wales in this current council election and by-elections that are currently taking place. The significance of this election then, this by-election, is that once you see the moves that have currently happened, it does give a sense, much like the polls that had been coming into play with at least a 20-point difference between the Labour and Conservative Party, that there certainly could be a swing towards the Labour Party then, with them perhaps going back into power after 14 years on a national scale. Will that come to bear, of course, is a big question mark. But this is ultimately what Chris Webb, the new MP, headed to Westminster said, having just won this by-election here in Blackpool South.
The people of Blackpool South have spoken for Britain. They have said to Rishi Sunak and to the Conservatives, they've had enough. They've had enough of 14 years of the Conservatives being in power. They have lost trust of the British people, and Blackpool has had enough of this failed government, which has crashed the economy, destroyed our public services, and put up taxes. They have said that it's time for change, and that change started here in Blackpool tonight.
So it's more about the Conservative Party losing seats by the looks of it than it is about the Labour Party actually gaining seats, Steve. And I say that because so far, of course, a large amount of votes still need to come in. One must add, there's only 34 out of 107 that have been completed in terms of count thus far. So still a lot of permutations could be at play. But so many seats have been put forward already that the Conservative Party have already lost over 120 seats in this by-election, with Labour only gaining 54 of those. So it kind of tells you then that the Conservative Party are the ones losing it, as opposed to the Labour Party necessarily grabbing all of those seats up.
Arabile, what does this mean for Rishi Sunak? We know that he's embattled. Penny Morden, lovely quote in the Times today, "I won't be installed in number 10 like a new boiler." And some people are arguing the merits of what would be good or bad about having a change of leadership for the Conservatives, which would mean a change of leadership for the country when we have a general election brewing as well. Is there likely to be any challenge on Rishi Sunak overtly, or do the Tories just want to get this over and done with after 13 years?
Yeah, well, reports are certainly that there could actually be a fight on the cards then if Rishi Sunak does incur what could be the biggest loss then for the Conservative Party before, up until 1995 ultimately, when, of course, you had seen the big swing then when it comes to the parliamentary gains as well in the UK. And that is going to be quite significant. Do you do that in the run-up then to the election with such little time on play? And how do you ramp up support then in that short amount of time? Is the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak the right man for the job, etc.? Well, James Cleverly has been also saying that he doesn't feel like it would be the right time to be changing a Prime Minister, and that if anything, there needs to be further backing of the Prime Minister. So there certainly will be challenges at play, is what the reports are at present. But there is some support as well, with many fearing that it could be destabilizing to offer up a new candidate for Prime Minister just before a general election. Just remember that the only man who actually does have that ballot constituency from the voters is actually Boris Johnson. But how things have changed then since that time.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to CNBC.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.